Truth Seekers. Yeah, it's Friday. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. I got a couple listeners send me frantic emails the other night. When the show's over, we occasionally leave the line open, or the microphone open, and say bad things. And apparently the mic was open, and I used the F-bomb the other night. But not to worry. It just goes over the Internet. Once the program is finished, what do? Disconnect the satellite uplink? That's done immediately, right? Yeah. And the stream stays on. The Internet stream stays on for a while. Yeah, sometimes. So if you were listening the other night, you heard anytime you hear something when we're in commercials or when the program's over or before the program starts, not to worry. It's just going to the Internet listeners, all right? Like just a moment ago, Kathy and I were sitting here discussing, they had their verdict today in the murder trial that she was in. And she's still trying to come down for that, by the way. They convicted him. And it was not the easiest conviction in the world. Maybe next week she'll talk about it after she's had a chance to process everything. But it was a hairy week for our producer lady here who... and I just have to mention it, during the day was listening to all sorts of strange and bizarre testimony about in a murder case, dismembered body and organs removed and head missing and all sorts of stuff. And then dashing home as soon as court was over and trying to produce a program. So it was just a hellacious week for our producer engineer and... round of applause for Kathy for sticking through it. Okay. There you go, kid. Huh?
They would have arrested me if I hadn't shown up. So, and you would have probably divorced me if I hadn't shown up here. So,
I had few choices. I know. You were absolutely.
The hardest part was not seeing my daughter at all this week.
That was true. Molly kept asking, is mommy dead? No. But Molly, it was really weird. Was trying to explain to Molly what you were doing. What a jury is, and today I think she finally got it. We were coming back from someplace and Kathy was still in the sequestered or whatever you call it when you're reaching a verdict. And, Molly was trying to understand why her mother, was gone, was at DeKalb County Courthouse all this week. And I was trying to explain to her, well, what a jury does, when somebody's done something bad, or they're accused of doing something bad, the jury, a group of people, have to decide whether or not the person really did something bad. And Molly said, well, when I grow up to become a woman, will I have to do that? I said, well, men and women do it. And she said, well, I have to do it. I said, well, maybe it's something that sometimes you have to do. But it's my understanding that once you serve on a murder trial jury, then you are exempt from ever again serving on a murder trial jury. Is that right? At least here in Georgia, that's true.
They gave me a letter that said that I could use, I'm not exempt from any jury service, but that I would not,
right, from a murder
on
trial,
my
right.
choice, I would not have to serve on another murder trial if I determined that I couldn't do it again.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, it's been a bizarre work for Malloy Show producer. We're going to take tomorrow off, Saturday, and go visit some friends, Chuck and Ann, up in the North Carolina mountains and hide for, just a night, just spend the night. Take Molly and one of her little friends and take a break. But so anyway, congratulations, Kathy, for handling all of this. You now have... you have an experience. We always talk about this, the difference in our experiences, our life experiences, primarily because of the difference in our age and what we've done in our lives, Kathy and me. You now have one up on me, kid. I've never sat on a murder trial. And from what I've heard this week, I would not choose to. I mean, if called, I certainly would serve, but... Anyway, okay, so that's a Kathy Bay update from this entire week, listening to grim, gruesome, bloody testimony during the day, and then coming home to produce a grim, bloody, gruesome radio program at night.
Yeah, and I just wanted to let everybody know that we will start adding fresh content to the Molloy site Monday. It's just been what's one of my duties, and I was not able to perform it this week. So next week, fresh blogs.
Yay! Yeah, that's another reason we didn't have a lot of blogs out this week, obviously. So, anyway. All right. To a couple of items here that have been... one just broke today, and the other one is from last Monday, a week ago. It's almost like black folks can't win. You know what I'm saying? White folk screw them up. Other black folks screw them up, right? Have you ever noticed that? The white thing... was when members and officials of a private swimming pool in a Philly suburb got their bathing suits in a wad about a visiting group of, minority children, so-called. I guess they were black and Latino. The white folks at this club asked them not to return and pulled their kids, the white kids, out of the water. Jesus, God. I realize we still live in a deeply, forever racist society and racially divided society. United States, where it concerns race, I guess is going to be like the Israelis and the Palestinians for the foreseeable future. But pulling your little white child out and saying, ew, Negroes, ew. It's a camp. A day camp called Creative Steps, and it had contracted for the 65 children at the day camp to go each Monday to the Valley Club in Huntington Valley. On June 29th, Monday a week ago, shortly after they arrived, according to the camp director, some black and Hispanic children reported hearing racial comments. She says a couple of the children ran down saying, Miss Wright, they're up there saying, what are those black kids doing here? Wright said she went to talk to a group of members at the top of the hill and heard one woman say she would see to it that the group made up of children around ages 5 to 13 did not return. Miss Wright said, quote, some of the members began pulling their children out of the pool and were standing around with their arms folded. Only three members left their children in the pool with us. So several days later, this would be last week, the club refunded the camp's $1,950 without explanation, said the camp director, Alethea Wright, and she added that some of the parents are weighing their options on legal action, the parents of the little kids who were denied. The swim club denied any racial discrimination in a statement posted on its website yesterday. The Valley Club said it didn't have, the pool doesn't have the capacity to deal with outside groups, which makes you wonder why they took the $2,000 to begin with. The club called its membership diverse and said any comments that may or may not have been made by members were not shared by the board. The Pennsylvania Human Relations Commission will investigate, and so on and so on. Senator Arlen Specter issued a statement calling the allegations extremely disturbing and said he was looking into the matter. It just goes on and on and on. And I saw on TV a couple of nights this week, you know, some of these little kids, 5, 6, 7, 9, 12 years old, who are puzzled and just puzzled. I mean, if your kid has never been denied something because of the way she looks or because of the prejudice or bigotry of adults who are denying a kid, Jesus Christ, a child, you know, whatever. But if your kid has never experienced that, You don't know what that's like. My child never has. My mother did because she was Italian. She's real dark. And I've seen her pictures from elementary school way back in, oh my God, I guess the early 1920s. And all these children, you know, the third grade picture where they line you up on the school steps. Everybody's had those. Well, the one my mother showed me, All these white children, and there's my mom. My mother, she looks like she's standing in a shadow, only she's not. It's her, you know, because she was so dark, being an Italian, and so on and so forth. And she used to tell me that the white kids used to come up to her and say, "Is your dad carry a knife?" Because, you know, he was Italian. So it's a sad situation. Now, that's how the white folks dumped on these children. And when we come back, I'll tell you how a bunch of black folks dumped on their brothers and sisters. Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Well, I don't even drive, I know. 21 past the hour. So, the white folks in the Philly suburb really dump on little black kids about using the pool. Now in Chicago, suburb of Chicago, four black cemetery workers apparently have been, this is what they're charged with, digging up corpses out of graves, dismembering the corpses, throwing away the, I'm sorry, Kathy, throwing away the coffins, getting rid of the bodies, and then reselling the grave sites. And according to the information out there on CNN, MSNBC, and other places, these four employees netted about $300,000 in doing this. The cemetery is the Burr Oak Cemetery in Alsip, Illinois. It's a black cemetery. Yeah, if you can imagine that. Because, well, it's a black cemetery because, you know, white folks used to not want black folks buried very close by. Oh, my God. Anyway, these four people are facing felony charges now. The authorities in Alsip, Illinois, the Cook County Sheriff's Department says this was a scheme to excavate graves already there, dump the remains, resell the plots, and pocket the cash. The sheriff of Cook County, Tom Dart, said earlier this week that the number of disturbed graves is about 300, but he said today the number's likely to rise. If you saw any of this video in the past 24 hours, you've seen distraught family members showing up at Burr Oak Cemetery in Alsip, Illinois, just really, really hurt and pained about what they're discovering. They have no idea where the remains of their loved ones are. Among those in the cemetery were people people who were well known in this country. One of those was Emmett Till, who was killed in August 1955 in Mississippi after white men. He was 14 after white men grabbed him because they said he looked the wrong way at a white woman. I remember that. I remember the pictures that were in the newspaper, the local newspaper in Toledo, because I was a newspaper boy, newspaper carrier. And I can remember seeing those pictures from the open coffin, Emmett Till's coffin, and it was shocking. His body was there. Apparently, the old coffin that he had been buried in, his body was exhumed about 5 years ago as part of a renewed probe into his death, and then he was reburied in a different casket. Well, the old casket was found, the sheriff says the old casket was found containing wildlife living inside the casket. I'll leave that to your imagination. The owners of the cemetery apparently were not in on the alleged scam. It was Carolyn Towns, an office manager for the cemetery, and the gravediggers, Keith Nix, Terrence Nix, and Maurice Daly. They've each been charged with a felony dismembering a human body. The sentences could range from 6 to 30 years. Dinah Washington is buried there. Some of the Negro League baseball players are buried there. The police were notified about this by the owners. The owners called and said they suspected some financial irregularities regarding their cemetery a couple of weeks ago, and the investigation began. So the story earlier this week about the black kids that were told to leave the pool, and some of the white members saying, well, this is going to change the complexion of the pool. So white folks treating black people badly, and then black folks treating dead and living black people badly. You just can't win, huh? Just can't win. My. All right. During this break coming up, we're going to open up the phone lines because we are giving away 3 podcast gift subscriptions this evening. Again, thanks to an anonymous donor. So in just about 30 seconds here, Kathy's going to open the lines. And if you want to win one of these free podcast subscriptions to the Molloy program, call in. And when we come back from the break, we will take the calls as they come in till we get a winner this hour. We'll give away 3, one each hour tonight. And the questions are trivia questions about Bush and Cheney and the Bush-Cheney crime spree that this country went through for the past 8 years. I wonder if 8 years from now we're talking about the Obama crimes. Nah, couldn't. That couldn't happen, could it? Nah, that couldn't happen. So anyway, the number here is 877-996-2556. We'll take your calls when we come back and see if we can give you a free subscription. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
A cafeteria line in Chicago. When he's the only trash here I see, and I'm thinking this man wears a white hood, and a knife his children should see. They'll slip through their windows and they'll see him, and they'll think that white hood's all they need. 'Cause it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life. It's a hard life wherever you go.
It's time once again for Molloy Program Podcast Trivia. A chance to win a new car. No. A $1,000 safe. No. A free 1-year subscription to the Mike Molloy Podcast. Yes! Yes! All right. We have our contestants, I believe. Do we not, Don? Don Pardo will pull back the curtain here, reveal the contestants. The first one is Stacy, who is listening on KTLK, listening in Los Angeles. Hey, Stacy.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Excellent.
All right. Now, you understand that if you get the right answer, you are going to win a 1-year gift subscription to the Molloy Podcast downloads and all that goes with that. And there is so much more. You're aware of that.
I'm very excited.
Are you, I was going to say, are you nervous?
Yes, I'm shaking.
Okay. Oh, my God. All right. Here we go. Which of the following accidents did not happen to Bush during his presidency? Which of the following accidents did not happen during the Bush presidency to him? A, fell off his bicycle. B, choked on a tater tot. C, fell off a Segway personal motorized vehicle. D, choked on a pretzel. Which of those accidents did not happen to George Bush during his presidency?
I don't even need to phone a friend or have a lifeline or anything. I know the answer to that one.
Which one's that?
That would be B, he did not choke on a tater tot.
That's it! That's it! You win! Oh, my God! Another winner! He did not choke on a tater tot. Stacy in Los Angeles wins a new car. No, not a new car. Damn it. Not that. Oh, that's right. You win a free one-year subscription thanks to an anonymous donor to the Molloy program of Molloy Podcast Downloads. A, B, access to the secret part of the MikeMolloy.com website. All right?
I'm very excited. Thank you.
All right, Stacy, hold on. I'm going to put you on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. Whew. Wow. How about that? That was quick. All right. Too much fun. We're not allowed a lot of fun on the Molloy program for obvious reasons. The summer pollen here in Georgia is starting to get to me again. Either that or the lung cancer. I choose to think it's the pollen. From Prairie 2, our economics correspondent. A lot of our correspondents have been MIA this week. I think our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, has been on a break, on vacation. Bob Alexander is working on the next Molloy Gumshoe segment. I think Bridget has been working on her artwork, and who else? Bob Alexander. Well, that's it. That's the crew. Ben Birch is always there, as is Kathy, and I. Anyway, from Prairie 2, subject line says "New Normals." He writes, "New unemployment claims were down 52,000 last week." Down 52,000 last week, but economists are predicting that this was just a holiday week blip in reporting, and expected next week's numbers to be back up well over 600,000. The number of continuing claims rose an alarming 159,000 last week to set yet another record, and this number does not include people whose benefits have run out. The U.S. unemployment rate is expected to pass 10% in July, with the real figure close to double that. 15 million adult kids were living with parents last year, with 55% of college-age men, 18 to 24, living at home. This was last year's number. This year's will be much worse, with job offers to graduates at record lows. Men are 70% of the newly unemployed in the last 18 months. One of the network infotainment shows this morning used this number as the basis for a segment on dating. The burning question for a young woman, would you date a guy without a job? Why not, since it's the new normal? The major economies of the world are continuing to push for non-dollar trade, and China is buying anything and everything from anybody that will take dollars. We are in for a lot of new normals. A guy that lives with his parents could be the new catch compared to the guy that lives in a box under a bridge. Or maybe it will be the size of the box he has, or how nice of a bridge he lives under. Prairie 2. Oh, my God. Well, if our house were ever, which it won't be, but if it were ever repoed, Molly has a playhouse out in the backyard. We'll just move into that. Be a little crowded. Go to Bruce's website, prairienumeral2.com, prairie2.com. Dave Lindorf had a blog piece posted at BuzzFlash, buzzflash.com, another must website. I'm sure you all are familiar with BuzzFlash. And he asked the question, if this were the democracy that the founding fathers thought that we're creating, wouldn't this news from CIA Director Leon Panetta that his agencies lied to Congress and that had lied repeatedly from 2001 through the end of 2008 concerning an as yet undisclosed secret program, wouldn't if the founding fathers and what passed for the Continental Congress back at the end of the 18th century when this country was trying to pull itself together, wouldn't there that information have resulted in a state of open rebellion? Wouldn't the Continental Congress or even the U.S. Congress now, if we had people in the Congress who had the determination that the framers of the original Constitution had, shouldn't there be open rebellion? Shouldn't there be a demand for answers? What are we getting from this Congress right now? Huh? I mean, after all, as Lindor Pates points out, the CIA is required by law to report to at least the majority and minority leaders of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees and to the majority and minority leaders of both houses of Congress about what they're doing. But not only did the CIA not report on what it was up to, it also lied about what it was up to. Jesus Christ. And I still get emails from people saying, Malloy, how dare you call the CIA a terrorist organization? Oh, kiss my grits. Are you out of your mind? Of course it is. Lindorf says, now, given what we do know about the Bush-Cheney administration, that it initiated a massive campaign of spying on Americans by the Defense Department, the FBI, and the National Security Agency, as well as other intelligence agencies, that it initiated a campaign of torture of captives, including American citizens, while asserting that the president didn't even need to notify the courts or the public about the arrest, detention, torture, or even execution of an American citizen if he, acting on his own, deemed that person to be an enemy combatant. And given that we also know that Bush and Cheney lied repeatedly about the justification for their invasion of Iraq and refused to be put under oath in their interviews by the 9/11 Commission, you would think that the members of Congress, who were railroaded into supporting everything from the USA Patriot Act to the Iraq War invasion, based on all these lies and all these deceptions, would be, at this point, demanding answers. At least regarding this mysterious program Panetta is talking about. Well, you would think that, wouldn't you? But instead, we get these vague expressions of concern and promises of reform by people like Representative Steny Hoyer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and CIA Director Panetta. My. What do you want to do? What do you folks want to do? I've said before many times about breaking free from this political system once and for all, from the standpoint of saying, well, I support this this party or support don't support that party. And it's becoming a real situation for me. What I'm trying to do here is spend a few weeks or maybe over the summer really getting my thoughts together about whether or not I've reached the end of the line with the entire system, but specifically my good old Democratic Party. I've talked about this before. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know this has been one of the themes of for me and for a lot of you. You know what to do about the political party that we aligned ourselves with, for better or for worse, kind of like a marriage. But you know, if you're married to a junkie who won't go get help, eventually you have to leave. You have to get a divorce. You have to detach. Isn't that what you're taught in these 12-step programs? If you're not the drug user, if you're just part of the family, you're taught that, aren't you? Detach. Sometimes you have to get away. So for your own sanity, and let the addict crash and burn until he or she realizes what they're doing. So maybe we have to do that with the Democratic Party, or maybe the whole political system, and see if there's any way to get it out of the clutches of corporate America. There may not be. It's one thing to continue to try to reform your own party. It's something else, again, to say, you know, there's got to be a different way to do this.
Searching low.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. Well, the a couple of years ago, I can remember reporting information that was starting to come out about what our friends in the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, shortly after we invaded Afghanistan, what they were doing. We invaded Afghanistan, what, in November of 2001? And what is this year? This is 2009. But I remember talking about, you know, all shocked and freaked out about the slaughter of people that were being rounded up by the so-called Northern Alliance, which is nothing but a huge drug gang. I don't know where they came from. I say drug gang. That's probably unfair of me to say that. These are people who make produce 80% of the world's heroin by producing about 100% of the world's opium. But anyway, that's who they are. They like to kill other people, and the means of killing usually is suffocation. So word leaked out that the Northern Alliance had rounded up thousands of Afghan prisoners. Now, this is Afghan crime on Afghan, you know, Afghan on Afghan crime. Rounded these people up, and they would put them in these big shipping containers, the ones that you see when you're stopped at a railroad crossing that say China shipping or whatever on them. Those. They look like boxcars. They're shipping containers. They're made of metal. And when you put one of those suckers out in the desert, the temperature inside can go up to 140, 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And they would stack prisoners in there, the Northern Alliance would, until the screaming stopped. And then they'd wait another day or two until the stink got so bad. Then they would open them up, get the bodies out, and go bury them. These were our people. Well, James Rice in New York Times tomorrow is reporting on that. This is not a news story, but there is a new aspect to it. As Risen writes, after mass killing of hundreds, perhaps thousands, of Taliban prisoners of war by the forces of the American-backed of an American-backed warlord, this guy's named Dostum. Do you remember him? You don't remember him? We'll get to him in a minute. He was our boy during our invasion of Afghanistan. Bush administration officials repeatedly said no to efforts to investigate the episode, according to government officials and human rights organizations. More and more and more is coming out now, right? American officials had been reluctant, according to Risen, to pursue an investigation sought by officials from the FBI, the State Department, the Red Cross, and human rights groups because the warlord... Now, before I finish the sentence, I want all of you right-wing bastards who listen to this program, especially you right-wing sons of bitches who have the audacity to write to me and tell me I'm wrong about the CIA, okay? All right, let me finish the sentence. American officials had been reluctant to pursue an investigation because the warlord involved, who ordered this mass murder, General Abdul Rashid Dostum, was on the payroll of the CIA. And his militia worked closely with the United States Special Forces in 2001. Can you say General McChrystal? Well, we'll get to that later. This was a CIA operation, once again, you see. Now, the people that we acquiesced to, the slaughter of the people to whom we acquiesced are the people now who are going to fight us until every goddamn American is either dead or out of their country. This is Vietnam. Seriously, this is Vietnam. Anyone who thinks, nobody in the Obama administration really thinks this, anyone who thinks that there's a way for us to win, quote-quote, the war, quote-quote, against Afghanistan is a fool. Nobody believes that in the Obama administration. What they're doing is maintaining this huge thudding U.S. footprint in that part of the world. We don't dare give it up. And the military-industrial complex in this country has pretty much told Obama, don't you goddamn dare give up on Afghanistan. Don't even think about it. Now, as we discovered the other night, Obama is not Jesus Christ. Obama is not anybody's messiah. He's a young politician, upwardly mobile a young man who is now the president of the United States, will be for probably, certainly this term, probably the next term, unless some right-wing freakoid who thinks he's that Obama's a socialist. God damn, you people are stupid. And tries to remove Obama from office with violence. Unless that happens, Obama will be president for two terms. And when he's finished, the country will be pretty much in the shape it was when he took over. Our national security state will be tighter on American citizens, and we will still have an expeditionary force in Afghanistan, or we will have been defeated in the same way we were defeated in Vietnam. I wonder who the right-wing crazy people are going to blame for our defeat in Afghanistan. They blamed our defeat in Vietnam on the media. The media did it because the media showed pictures of the slaughter. The media, oh, and all those hippies and, you know, granola eaters and flip-flop wearers and long-haired bastards who hate America and love the, oh, that's right, and Jane Fonda. So I wonder who they're going to blame this time for another defeat. Now, you know, Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon were both famously disinclined to be president when the United States suffered a major military defeat, although both of them were involved in just that. And I wonder if Barack Obama is going to adopt the same mindset. I'm not, you know, in the first place, I'm in an anomaly in American presidents. I damn sure am not going to leave a reputation of having allowed the United States military to be defeated by a bunch of goddamn camel jockeys. Huh? You think he's thinking that? More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. The newest revelation about the criminality that this country has put out for the rest of the world to deal with during the Bush years, especially during the Bush years, is now pretty much out there. James Risen in tomorrow's New York Times brings out once again this mass killing of thousands of prisoners of war that were held by the Northern Alliance, so-called. Those were our so-called allies in Afghanistan when we invaded in 2001. Now, the Taliban were the bad guys. I'm not sure who decided the Taliban were bad guys, but they were. What their connection was to Osama bin Laden or the attack on this country on September 11, 2001 has never been made clear, at least not to me. And I may not be the brightest bulb in the marquee, but I'm not the dimmest either. So I guess they just decided, okay, heads, it's the Taliban. Tails, it's the Northern Alliance. Flip. Ah, Northern Alliance. They're our allies. Okay. So what apparently what the U.S. Intelligence agencies mostly the CIA, and the U.S. military commanders either did or did not know was that they were dealing with somebody who is a mass killer and who had fun doing it. General Abdul Rashid Dostum was on the payroll of the CIA, and his militia worked closely with the United States Special Forces in 2001. So what Dostum did was round up thousands of people that he told the Americans, these are Taliban. They may have been. They may not have been. Didn't matter. We don't care. We don't care about that stuff. Just give us a person, and we can label that person enemy combatant. We'll lock him up and then torture him. Because you know why? Because that's who we are now. So whether they were Taliban or not is unprovable. These were Afghans. This would be like what happened in this country, I guess, during the Civil War, when cousins would fight cousins, or you know, what will probably happen in this country again at some point when we finally implode. But we're not talking about us right now. We're talking about Afghanistan. So the once the word started to leak out through the Red Cross and the FBI and the State Department, the Bush crime family decided to cover everything up. They decided to pretend it didn't happen. They were worried. According to James Risen, the United States worried. Now, when a writer says the United States worried about undermining the American-supported government of President Harman Karzai, he doesn't mean the United States. What the, you know, he means 20 people in the Bush crime family, not the United States. But you see, they're not allowed to say that. Journalists are not allowed to say that. 20 people in the Bush crime family were worried about undermining the American-supported government of President Harman Karzai, in which General Dostum had served as a defense official. This guy was probably trained by John Negroponte or Otto Reich or what's his name, Dick Cheney. So it's not clear how or if, Risen writes, the Obama administration will address the issue of this war crime. In recent weeks, State Department officials have quietly tried to stop General Dostum's reappointment as military chief of staff to President Harman Karzai. He's been hiding out in Turkey. Dostum has been. Now, as Risen writes, the question of culpability for the prisoner deaths, which may have been, this is journalist's words, which may have been the most significant war crime in Afghanistan after the 2001 American-led invasion, may have been? The question of culpability for the deaths of all these people has now taken on new urgency since the general, Dostum, an important ally of Mr. Karzai, this is who we're supporting. These are our people in Afghanistan. This is the government we're trying to shore up during the Bush-Cheney years. Now, Obama is trying to back away from Harman Karzai. Harman Karzai is the most corrupt son of a bitch. He makes Ferdinand Marcos look like a penny pincher. Harman Karzai is a thug, an absolute Unocal oil company thug. That's what he is. And he wants as his defense chief this murderer, Abdul Rashid Dostum. Oh, excuse me, General Abdul Rashid Dostum. A senior State Department official said that Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton and Richard Holbrooke, the special representative on Afghanistan and Pakistan, that the two of them, Clinton and Holbrooke, have told Karzai of their objections to reinstalling General Dostum. You know, he's a mass killer. He's a madman. The American officials have also pressed his sponsors in Turkey to try to, you know, delay his return to Afghanistan. You know, can you hold him? Can you bust him on a traffic ticket? We know he's a goddamn mass killer, but we won't do anything. Can you bust him? Hey, Turkey people, will you hold him? Will you detain him? We can't, because we are cowardly sons of bitches where it concerns that, but we are greedy, aggressive SOBs where it concerns continuing our killing in Afghanistan. Isn't this madness? Do you believe we do this every night, you and me? Do you believe we do this? Anyway. Clinton and Holbrooke are asking Turkey to delay Dostum's return to Afghanistan while talks continue with Mr. Karzai over what General Dostum, the mass murderer's role, is going to be. That's according to an official briefed on the matter. Nobody will speak for the record. Now, this is the line I like. This is what Risen writes. Asked about looking into the prisoner deaths, the official said, that's a U.S. official, said, "We believe that anyone suspected of war crimes should be thoroughly investigated." God damn. As long as they speak a different language and are brown. "We believe that anyone suspected of war crimes should be thoroughly investigated." Yoo-hoo, over here, boys. You don't have to go to Afghanistan. You don't have to look at Dostum. Look at George Bush. Look at Dick Cheney. Look at John Yoo. Look at Alberto Gonzalez. I mean, Jesus, I'll provide you a list, since you dumbasses can't seem to be able to put one together for yourselves, you Obama officials. What are you looking over there for? Look over here. You want war crimes? You want war criminals? What did he say? Or she? This official? "We believe that anyone suspected of war crimes should be thoroughly investigated." There are two important words in that sentence. Anyone and thoroughly. Right? "We believe that anyone suspected of war crimes should be thoroughly investigated." Oh, yeah. Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha. Can we move on? Okay. While the deaths have been previously reported, the backstory of the frustrated efforts to investigate them has not been fully told. This is what Risen is writing about. This is what the story is about today. The story is 8 years old, but the reason it's popping up now is because the efforts to investigate this mass killing, the story of those efforts has not been fully told. The killings occurred in late November 2001, just days after we invaded Afghanistan to oust the Taliban government in Kabul. Thousands of Taliban fighters surrendered to General Dostum's forces, which were part of the American-backed Northern Alliance, in the city of Kunduz. They were then transported to a prison run by the general's forces near the town of Shibargan. Shibargan? Sounds like Sheboygan, doesn't it? But it's not. So all these prisoners were transported to a prison run by General Dostum. Now, what do you suppose happened at the prison? Well, we have a break here, so I will just advise you that the rest of this story is a little bit difficult to listen to. But it's in the New York Times tomorrow, and it's on the radio tonight, so you can handle it. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Words are meant to bend.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox based on GM compact crossover segment. Excludes other GM vehicles. All right. So, it's an old story. It's an old story, but it just might work. It's an old story going back 8 years, but it has a new wrinkle. The new wrinkle is how an investigation of the slaughter of hundreds or thousands, take your pick, of captives, people that the Northern Alliance, insane opium growers and dealers in Afghanistan. And our friends, we always pick the right side, don't we? We always do. Look how well we did in Central America, South America, Southeast Asia, Middle East. We always pick the right side to guarantee that our asses will be hated for generations to come. We always do this, and the reason it always works out that way is the United States of America is never on the side of the people. Never. For the past 120 years, the United States of America, in all its different permutations, has been on the side of the corporations, the corporatists, and the people in foreign countries who will do the bidding of the American corporations. That's what capitalism is all about. It has completely eaten the United States alive. So here we are, yet again. No surprise, because this is what we do. For those of you who think that it's a mistake that we always come down on the side of the oppressor, please adjust your thinking. That is deliberate. Anyway, the killings occurred in late 2001, shortly after we arrived and forced the ouster of the Taliban government. Thousands of Taliban fighters surrendered to General Dostum's forces, and they were sent to a prison run by the general's forces near the town of Shibargan. Survivors and witnesses told the New York Times and Newsweek in 2002 that over a three-day period, Taliban prisoners were stuffed into closed metal shipping containers, given no food or water. Many suffocated while being trucked to the prison. Other prisoners were killed when guards shot into the containers for sport. The bodies were buried in a mass grave in a stretch of desert just outside Shibargan. A recently declassified 2002 State Department intelligence report states that one source, whose identity is redacted, concluded that about 1,500 prisoners died. Estimates from other witnesses or human rights groups range from several hundred to several thousand. The report said that several Afghan witnesses to all this were later tortured and murdered. In Afghanistan, rival warlords, you see, have had a history of eliminating enemy troops by suffocating them in sealed containers. General Dostum has said previously that any such deaths of the Taliban prisoners were unintentional. In 2008, a forensics team working with the United Nations discovered excavations that suggested the mass graves had been moved. Quick, hide the bodies, all thousands of them. Satellite photos obtained by the New York Times showed that the site where these graves were was disturbed even earlier in 2006. Well, it's a big deal to move thousands of corpses. The first calls for an investigation of all this came from the International Committee of the Red Cross. A military commander in the U.S.-led coalition rejected the request from the Red Cross official for an inquiry in late 2001. A few months later, Del Spry, the FBI's senior representative at the detainee prison in Guantanamo, Cuba, heard accounts of the deaths from agents he supervised there. Separately, 10 or so prisoners brought from Afghanistan reported that they had been, quote, stacked like cordwood, end quote, in shipping containers and had to lick the perspiration off one another to survive. Mr. Spry recalled and similar accounts of suffocations and shootings. A declassified FBI report dated January 2003 confirms that the detainees provided these accounts. You want more? Oh, Christ, what's the point? When we come back after this break, we're going to give away another Malloy podcast subscription. So we'll open up the lines here in a minute. And you can take a shot at it, so to speak. I guess I shouldn't use that terminology anymore. These are the people that we are doing business with in Afghanistan. The terrorists, once again, the killers, the government of Hamid Karzai. This is how we win the hearts and minds yet again, right? We do it again and again. Now, let me restate, this is not a mistake. We're not making a mistake here. We're not doing, inadvertently, doing Vietnam all over again. We are doing this deliberately because we'll be goddamned if we're going to allow people, anywhere, make their own decision about how they're going to govern themselves. Time once again for podcast trivia here on the Mike Malloy program. Our winners tonight will spend a lovely weekend at the Honolulu, Hawaii Hilton, brought to you by your good friends at Offshore Drilling. No, you won't. What you will get if you win tonight is a free one-year subscription to the Malloy Show downloads, podcasts, plus all kinds of other stuff that come with the subscription that we cannot talk about on the air. Are we ready? I think we are. Our first contestant for this hour is Gila. Is that right, Gila?
Yes.
In Farmington Hills, Michigan. Gila, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy. How's the unemployment picture in Farmington Hills?
I haven't worked in 3 years. It's touch and go.
Yeah. Do you? Is the fact that General Motors came out of bankruptcy today, is that going to have a difference in your life or anybody in your family or not?
I hope they can get up and running and I can get back to work. I don't work directly for them. I'm sort of in. Oh, I don't know. An offshoot of...
Sure, yeah. So many people who work or used to work in the state of Michigan can say that about the auto industry. All right, you ready to play?
Yes.
Okay, here's your question. You'll have four choices in the multiple choice to answer, and if you get the right one, you win a free one-year subscription to the Malloy Show podcast, thanks to an anonymous donor. Here's your question. What was the name of the secret society Bush belonged to at Yale University? Was it A, Crown and Scepter, B, Crown and Seven Up, C, Skull and Bones, D, Jack Daniels and Old Granddad? You say C, Skull and Bones?
Yes.
Oh, my God! You win! All right, Gila, you have won a one-year subscription to the Malloy Show podcasts and downloads and all the secret stuff that's available on our website that we dare not talk about on the air, or people would just demand that something. I don't know what they would demand. Either demand we'd be removed from the air or demand that they'd be given access. But anyway, thanks, Gila. Stay on the line. Kathy will take the information, and I'm glad you won, all right?
Thank you so much.
Okay, hold on. Now, I know what a lot of people are going to say. They're going to say, well, Jesus, that wasn't a very hard question. Hey, it's just the luck of the draw. Some people get the tough ones. Some people get the easy ones, right? Eh? Eh? All right, where were we? Oh, that's right. We were talking about James Risen's article in tomorrow's New York Times about the United States squashing or quashing an inquiry, an investigation into all these killings in Afghanistan. I remember when that story first came out, and it was sickening. It was horrifying. You know, I think I first got my talons into it in 2002, back in the bad old days of working for Air America, and just shocked, I tell you. To come to terms with the fact that my people were doing it again. doing it again. And I couldn't understand that. You know, after all the hard lessons that we were supposed to have learned from just one long, miserable experience, and that was the our invasion of Vietnam. After all the things that we were supposedly we learned about never invading a country without an exit strategy. You notice the first one is not never invade a country because they've struck us first. Of course not. I mean that's so last century. That's so World War II, you know. So never invade a country unless you have overwhelming force. B, that you have an exit strategy, and C, that the mission, well, B would be that the mission is clearly defined so that everybody from the Pentagon planners all the way down to the guys carrying rifles walking point on patrol so that everybody knows what the objective really is. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody down the chain of command is going to understand what the objective is or why they're being asked to go die in some goddamn jungle or desert, but at least let them understand what the objective is. They don't have to, let them know what the objective is. They don't have to understand it. These are soldiers. Soldiers are not supposed to understand anything. They're supposed to take orders and do exactly as they're told. Soldier, go die. Sir, yes, sir! You know, that sort of thing. And then it started to dawn on me. No, these are not generals in the new century fighting a war from 45 years ago. No. This is the same old, same old. This is what the United States Marine Expeditionary Force did in Central America that Smedley Butler wrote about. General Smedley Butler, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, what he wrote about when he wrote War is a Racket, about going into Nicaragua and going into Guatemala to protect American corporate interests, period. That's all. Jesus, this is not new stuff. So, you know, having to revisit American history yet again and then realizing that these are not mistakes when we do this sort of thing. What we did in Iraq was not a mistake. We have our puppet now. We have Maliki would just get red-eyed and froth at the mouth to hear some 25-cent radio talk show host say that he's a puppet of the United States government, but he damn sure is. He is and shall be forever. He will do exactly as he's told behind the scenes. Out where everybody can see, he will switch and twitch his independent ass, but he is our puppet. In the same manner that Ferdinand Marcos was our puppet, in the same manner that Diem was our puppet, in the same manner that the Shah of Iran was our puppet. Do you want me to go on? No, of course not. There's no reason to go on. We don't invade countries to bring peace and justice and an end to the killing. You understand that now, don't you? I mean, is there, if one of you right wingers want to get your courage on, man up and call me and tell me that you disagree, that we always bring freedom and justice, and then I will say to you, give me one example, and then you will say, well, what about World War II? No. I'm talking about since 1950. How about since 1951? How about since 1950? Okay, that would be a good starting point, since 1950. Since that time, we have overthrown, our CIA has overthrown 30 governments that we know about, destabilized God knows how many economies, wreaked more destruction on the globe than the Soviet Union did in the same period of time. And we do this not because we are vampires or the living dead or ghouls, but because we are a corporatist state. And this is what a corporatist state does. This is what unbridled capitalism does. The military arm of the government becomes the spear point. And in order to either secure markets or gain, it used to be gain markets, that, you know, the turn of the last century. But that's a million years ago. You know, going from, 1899 to 1900, that was in a galaxy far, far away, long, long ago. We don't have to go back that far. But why not? So what we've been doing back in the day, it was expanding markets. Now it's seizing resources. That's what we're about. Seizing resources, and in so many instances, that means human resources, because corporate America, as it abandons its industrial base here, because they don't give a damn about the United States. Why should they? Corporate America couldn't care less. What corporate America cares about is profit. Corporate America is not a person. It is a collection of little marks on pieces of paper that have been properly codified and stored in courthouses and departments and places. And it is bloodless. It is not alive. Corporate America is not carbon-based, a life form. It is something else. And corporate America wants resources, it wants markets, and it wants cheap, if they can't get free, labor. So when we invade countries, does anyone disagree with this? Can I see some hands out there? Do you disagree? When we invade a country, we are not there so that all the little girls in these repressive regimes can go to school. That's not why we go. If that happens as a result of our invasion, oh, good. You know, it'll stay put for, I don't know, a year or two until we're thrown out or defeated, and then the little girls will go back to reading religious texts rather than getting an education. And little boys, too, for that matter, but at least little boys give the appearance of going to schools, right? Why is this so hard for us to understand? I don't know either. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Ten before the hour. Email here from Giovanna. Mike, I don't know if you've thought of this, but I'm sure you have, as well as many of your other as the other truth seekers out there. Remember how you tell us that you think our president is using rope-a-dope on his Republican opponents, and any moment now he's going to come racing out of the corner and hit them upside the head? Mike, I think it was us, the progressives, the liberals, and the real Democrats who have the bruises. The rope-a-dope was for us. He said or intimated the right things, and we fell for it, just like right-wingers fall for those who say they will end abortion and all the other evils they hate. I hope I'm wrong, but it sure doesn't look like it. WTF is going on here. Peace, Giovanna. Yeah, I'm starting to think that too. Again, I just can't believe that Barack Obama is an evil man, the way George Bush was a stupidly evil man, and Dick Cheney was a brilliantly evil man, And so many of the holdovers that came into office with Cheney were brilliantly evil people. I just can't believe that about Obama. I can't. Maybe that is a clear indication of my naivete at this late stage in my life. Maybe it is. But I can't get my mind around the idea that Barack Obama is a bad man who is deliberately trying to further the objectives of the corporatists in this country, which is to destroy the country, give all of us a $7 an hour job, or let us go into business for ourselves. exploit any and every country we possibly can. You know, just a continuation of the same old, same old. I can't believe that Barack Obama believes in the idea of reducing the social safety net to the point where it's like a cobweb. It's hard for me to accept that, to think in those terms. And I don't know why. I don't know why it's hard. I guess because of his background, because of his youth, because of his intelligence, because I don't think he could have completely and entirely fooled everyone who voted for him, 50-plus million people, over a 2 or 3 year period. I mean, is that possible? Are we really that stupid? The media were constantly on him, trying to, denigrate his efforts until it became clear and apparent that he was going to win. And then all of a sudden they're in a celebratory state of mind, the media. But you may be right, Giovanna. Maybe the ones being rope-a-doped were us. I don't know. I hate to think of that. I do know that we have an obligation as long as we're going to live here. As long as we're going to live here and claim to be Americans, we really have an obligation to what? we really have an obligation to fight. Oh, okay. Struggle. Okay. Educate ourselves. All right. It's getting goofy. Insist on justice and fair play in our political system. Okay. Yeah. That's a good one. You see how crazy it's becoming? I mean, it really is. I swear to God, at some point in this program, now I'm not going to do it until the money you paid for the subscriptions runs out, but at some point, I think what we're going to have to do, and this is another thing we always hint at, and don't send me emails telling me not to do it, because it's just, I don't know if I'm serious or not, probably not, but switch the program over from all this frustrating claptrap into something that's, more like infotainment, and just throw in the sponge, No. Hey, listen, as long as Tom Hartman continues in his manner to fight, as long as Rachel Maddow in her manner, as long as Stephanie Miller in her manner, as long as people like that continue to fight, I'll stick around too. But they have to lead. Oh, man. All right. We're going to come to your calls when we come back from this break, which we're about to take. I would talk to you, Michael, or Kalamazoo Jim, except for one fact, and that is we're about 20 seconds away from taking a break. So we have one more podcast subscription to give away this evening, which we will do at the bottom of the next hour. 11:30 here in the East. If you're listening live on the West Coast, 8:30 in the West. So stick around. Now, if you don't catch this program live, then obviously you kind of miss out on the podcast gift subscription. So you need to call the program directors of the stations that carry this show on a delayed basis and insist that it be carried live. All right, stick around. Break here. We'll be back I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is the Malloy Show. Remember a couple of months ago when the Department of Homeland Security issued a report talking about domestic terrorism, and a previous report had talked about left-wing terrorism. That would be animal rights activists and people who don't like frankenfood. But the right-wing domestic terrorists are people who will kill you, kill your children, blow up buildings, and kill 168 people at a sitting, and arm them. Yeah, you know, just yeah, we know the difference between right-wing murderers and left-wing loudmouths. There is a definite difference. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is based over here in Montgomery, Alabama, has sent a notice, a request, a letter, whatever you want to call it, to Congress today. The Southern Poverty Law Center, if you're not familiar, is one of the country's main monitors of hate groups. Now, I know Alexander Coburn hates them. Every time Coburn writes for The Nation, he accuses the Southern Poverty Law Center of being just money-grubbing freaks who really don't care about hate groups and yada, yada, yada. Coburn writes some nice stuff, but he's also a psychopath. And which is fine. You know, The Nation has had a lot of people write for them over the course of its long 100-plus year history. And some of the writers have been just outstanding. And not to say that Coburn's not an outstanding writer. He is. And I like his website, too, the one he does with Jeffrey, what's his name? But Coburn is truly a psychopath. But that's okay. You know, that's okay. He's a psychopath on the left. Rather have him on our side than the psychopaths on the right. Having said all that, the Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the country's main monitors of these hate groups. And it asked Congress today to investigate racial extremism in the military. I would suggest they also investigate religious extremism in the military. The Christian fundamentalist arm-waving, rapture, crazy people influence in the military. The SPLC has found that U.S. service members are participating in a social networking site that is absolutely racist. The site is run by the Detroit-based National Socialist Movement.
Oh, well, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, they're Nazis. Yeah, okay. That site describes itself as, quote, an online community for whites by whites. That's always code words. You know, if somebody says it's an online community by blacks for blacks, nobody pays too much attention to that except black folk. Some white racists will say, see, they're being racist. No, they're not. They're being exclusionary. when a site says run by Mexicans for Mexicans, run by Germans for Germans, Italians for Italians are being exclusionary, but they're not being psychopathic, murderous, goddamn right-wing, skinhead, racist Nazis. Only white people do that. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Don't fall into the trap that when if a club says whites only and another club says blacks only, it always just intrigues the hell out of them. Now, I realize we have laws in the books now where neither can do that. But it also always intrigues me when the white people go, oh, look, see, it says blacks only. Isn't that reverse racism? In the first place, there's no such thing as reverse racism, you dumb bunnies. But in a larger sense, you know, after close to 350 years of being beat into the ground, black folks sometime, believe it or not, I've been told, I don't know, I'm a Caucasian, but I've been told that sometimes black folk like to just get the hell away from white people. You know, just get away. Like, get together. There's a club called Jackson Jill's for black youth exclusively. I mean, how many cotillions here in the South or up North were for white people exclusively? It's just absolute nonsense to me and funny in a sick, degenerate sort of way when I hear white people get all pissy because something says makes itself known that it's only for blacks or it's only for Jews or it's only for a group of people that historically have been oppressed in this country, right? But I digress. So the SPLC in Montgomery, Alabama, has is letting Congress know that racism and religious extremism is really being promoted in and flourishing in the United States military. The letter that the SPLC sent to Congress said in part, "We urge your committees to investigate the threat posed by racial extremists who may be serving in the military to ensure that our armed forces are not inadvertently training future domestic terrorists." Morris Dees, who's the executive director of the SPLC, or the founder of it, wrote that. That's his quote. Dees said existing Pentagon regulations that prohibit active participation in extremist groups should be strengthened further. Lieutenant Colonel Les Melnick, a Pentagon spokesman, said in an email that current policy is believed to be sufficient. Yeah. Under that policy, military personnel, quote, must reject, end quote, participation in organizations that talk about supremacist causes. Colonel Melnick said, quote, "We believe the policy is broad and exclusive in its definition of active participation and encourages commanders to pursue and weed out service members who actively participate in these types of groups," end quote. Jeff Shope, commander of the National Socialist Movement, said there are members of the military who participate on the site, but not all are members of his organization. He said he couldn't say how many there are. Herr Shope says there are more racialists, his word, racialists in the military now. But those who are members of his organization are advised not to recruit others. Right. Yeah, exactly. The military is and always has been, especially when you're fighting against people who look very, very different from you and your buddy. And the last several conflicts that the United States corporations have ordered the military to go fight and kill and die in have had that kind of situation. Brown skin Middle Easterners, dark-skinned Southeast Asian people, dark-skinned Central and South American people, dark-skinned Filipino people, dark-skinned Afghan people, dark-skinned Iranian. You see how that goes. So people who go fight in those wars, especially young, impressionable males, white males who go fight in those wars, it's very easy, I've been told, when they come back from the horror that is that kind of conflict. All these wars now, pretty much, unless they're in Afghanistan, to some degree, are urban conflict, which means that everybody, every adult, is a potential enemy in the mind of the invader. In the mind of the invader, everybody is a potential bullet in the head or IED in the road. And, of course, you know, the statement has been made, none of this would happen if we were just not there to begin with, right? But that's subversive talk and doesn't belong on a nice American talk show. But when these soldiers, young men, are convinced that the slopes or the gooks or the nips or the towel heads or whatever the current racial epithet is against our so-called enemies, that that they are the cause of all this young white boy's problems. Well, when he gets back to this country, he is easily recruited into racist, murderous right-wing organizations. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Past the hour. To your phone calls, Kalamazoo Jim is calling from that city in Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hey, I've been listening to you for many years here. You got us through 8 years of Bush.
Well, okay.
Yeah, some of us knew about the 1950s Central America and the overthrow of Iran's Mossadegh. And I wondered, you know, how Eisenhower was involved in this. See, we were supposed to like Ike, and he turned out to be a prophet.
How was he? I think Eisenhower was dedicated to the belief that communism posed a hideous threat to freedom. What he meant was communism posed a hideous threat to capitalism. And I think he was a willing participant in trying to stop communism. But I think he also understood that there was something growing in this country that was going to destroy this country, and it has destroyed it.
Well, several years ago, during the good old days of IE America,
my God.
I think it was Tom Hartman, because he would have guests on there.
Right.
And he had guests Sander Berger and Richard Clark on a couple of times.
Yeah.
And I could get through because he was on, like, three radio stations, I guess, and Sirius Satellite, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
But while the topic was about how the Bush transition team was, Condi Rice and Bush, they
right.
were specifically warned about bin Laden and Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
But I managed to ask these guys a question about Central America, you know, like what Eisenhower had to do with this.
Uh-huh.
And each guy, this was on separate times, both Sander Berger and Clark said to me on the air that Nixon was the one that was behind all this. You know, the...
That would make sense, yeah, sure.
It was Nixon who was behind this, and I couldn't get out of them what Eisenhower had to do with this, if he was just out playing golf or what.
Well, I never considered that. That's a very interesting point. Eisenhower was a military commander, obviously. We all know who Dwight Eisenhower was. He was not a politician, and I think in one of the memoirs, or not memoirs, but one of the biographies of him that I read... not that I've read a lot, but, you know, one of the biographies I read about Eisenhower, because I was curious, he didn't know when he was asked to run for president if he would run as a Democrat or a Republican.
Yes.
He was that non-political.
Mm-hmm.
He was willing to do it, I guess, for whatever reasons. And then he stumbled into a rat's nest, the Korean War, the so-called missile crisis that the Kennedy administration invented. There was no missile crisis whatsoever. Yeah, the missile gap. That's right. So Eisenhower, I think Eisenhower tried to warn the American people of what he saw coming. And the fact that Nixon might have been the evil clown behind the throne, that's a good point. I never considered that, Jim.
Yeah, you know, they told me that Nixon was behind it all using the CIA and the U.S. Information Agency. The U.S. bombed, I believe it was the Guatemala capital, with U.S. airplanes and overthrew their government.
Oh, yeah.
They installed a puppet of the United Fruit Company, which later became Dole.
Right.
Bob Dole?
no connection. No connection.
Yeah, well, this School of the Assassins, excuse me, Peter Werby's been involved with their School of America's Watch. He goes to the schedules pretty regularly.
Yeah, he comes down. I've been to the annual demonstrations, I'm embarrassed to say, only two or three times.
Did Peter cross the wall there?
No, I have not. I've not been arrested. Peter has been down several times.
Yep.
He stopped in to visit us one time about 5 years ago when he came down. But School of the America's Watch. What's his name? Father Roy Bourgeois,
right.
Who was the. The force behind organizing that, he didn't pass away, did he?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But he's been the force behind organizing School of the America's Watch. They've changed their name, of course. It's now the Inner Hemisphere or whatever the hell it's called, but it's still just a branch of the terrorist organization that is the CIA. Yeah, sure. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing.
And finally here, I've been a contributor to the Southern Poverty Law Center for over 20 years. Morris Dees is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I hear them doing something, I have to send them another check.
I hear you.
They do good work.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear you say something about them, too. I guess that means I owe them another check.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, I've been over there. I went to visit their headquarters in Montgomery. At the same time, I went over to Maya Lin to visit Maya Lin's civil rights memorial there.
Well, and I could go on for hours, but I better let you go.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jim. Good to hear from you. Take care. I appreciate it. Podcast trivia coming up next. So now's the time to get online. We'll be giving away another Malloy podcast subscription. So get in here now, 877-996-2556.
Recently, new.
I'll give you a clue what the boys are out after the girl.
All right, Johnny, who are our next contestants? Well, Mike, we have three people waiting on hold for you to move on and give away the next free podcast to the Mike Malloy program. Okay. This will be a one-year gift subscription. Compliments of, we're still working on the 10, was it 10 that was sent in by the anonymous donor? We have some more that have been sent in recently that we'll also be giving away. So let's try to give away one more tonight. Michael is calling from Portland, Oregon. Hey, Michael.
Hi.
Isn't Portland, isn't that where Hartman lives?
Yes, it is.
Yeah? You listen to him?
Absolutely.
Yeah? What do you like about his show?
Well, It's pretty varied, and he seems to have this kind of a profound understanding of the Constitution.
Whose program do you like better, his or mine?
You know, Mike, I sway a little bit towards the radical side. My father was a Vietnam vet, and I have some pretty strong feelings about war. So,
oh my God,
say, like I tend towards you.
Yeah, I was just kidding. I love listening to Hartman. I really do, especially, you know, he can get a right-wing intellectual on the air, like a guest, like an author, somebody who's written a book from an ultra-conservative perspective, and just slice and dice him. And I really admire that. I don't have the patience. I really don't. But anyway. All right. Are you ready to play this game?
Yeah.
All right. Let me give you a question. It's multiple choice. Here's your question. George W. Bush graduated from Yale in 1968 with a degree in what subject? Was it A, history, B, political science, C, mixology, D, nuclear physics?
What was A and B one more time?
A is history, okay. B, political science.
Okay, I'd have to say history.
History? You win!
All right, Michael!
And now this is from a guy who said, you remember when he said, history can be like so far back it doesn't count. Remember that statement?
Yeah, or the Constitution is just a GD piece of paper.
Yeah. Great leader, wasn't he? I'm sure when he graduated the degree in history, it must have been based on gentleman's C's. Are you familiar with that term?
Well, I know he was a legacy, and he got a C average, if that's what you're referring to.
That's kind of it, and the only reason they give the C is because of the legacy, not because the student has earned a C.
Right.
What a miserable time. All right, Michael, congratulations. Hold on. Kathy's going to get the pertinent information, and we'll see you on the podcast, all right?
Thank you.
All right, sir. Take care. All right. Well, that if you're holding on for podcast trivia, we'll catch you next time around. Okay. All right. And we have a bunch more gift subscriptions to give away on Fridays, so not to worry. If and I mean this in a very straightforward way, a lot of people who listen to this program are dealing with some financial problems right now. We certainly can relate to that. You know, one day in February we were employed, the next day we were not. And you really have to move fast to stay in the ranks of the wage earners right now. That certainly is the truth. So if you're anybody's, eligible to play the game, if you happen to be somebody who is dealing with a shortage of funds right now, this is a great way to get a subscription. If you are not dealing with that, we invite you to become a subscriber. Go to MikeMalloy.com. And you get the podcast downloads for 25 cents a program. That's it, a quarter. it works out to $59.40 a year. And that works back the other way to 25 cents a program. As I've said a million times, the point where you're ready to tear your hair out, anyone who says this is a two-bit radio program is exactly right. So in subscribing, it's not just the podcast you get. You also get Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. By the way, for our subscribers, there's a new one up. It's been up for several days. I guess that makes it not new. But if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. This one, the one that's up right now, involves gunfire. So you might want to check it out. So we invite you to become a podcast subscriber. That's a way to make sure that this program stays where it is. Not just on the air and on the internet and satellite radio, but also on iPhone and podcast and downloads and so on and so forth. So stay with us. The field of liberal or progressive talk radio hosts is narrowing every day. Have you noticed that? So let's keep this one going. All right, where else are we? This kind of caught my eye today also. For people who insist on voting Republican, especially people, working class people, who vote Republican because the Republicans always promise you they're going to stop abortion. They're going to deny gay folk the same civil rights that they have. They're going to stop the horror of socialized medicine, even though they themselves get it. You know, I'm talking about Republican lawmakers. The people who vote Republican invariably, unless they are in that top 0.1%, if you're in that top 0.1%, if your income is over $5 million a year, yeah, vote Republican, of course, because your soul is already condemned to everlasting damnation anyway. So you might as well have fun while you're here. And that means continuing to support the people who will continue to make sure that you make at least $5 million a year. It's a big circle. It really is. But in these times, if you're making that kind of money, it means you're a liar, a crook, a thief, or you work in right-wing talk radio. There's no other place that you're going to make that kind of money and make it legitimately. And I include sports figures with that, too. But anyway, if you vote Republican, something you need to know, if you vote Republican, you're having trouble with your mortgage payments because you're unemployed, you have no health insurance. You had to inform your son or daughter or both that you cannot provide them with tuition or money for their books. They're going to have to go to work, which means they're going to have to move back home. You don't know if you can make your mortgage payment. That's the main issue here. Well, guess what the Republicans have for you? Yesterday, they, according to MarketWatch, which is online, WallStreetJournal.com, Republicans on Thursday lashed out in opposition to legislation that would require more than $6.5 billion of funds from the federal government's bank bailout package to be used to help troubled homemakers and neighborhoods on Main Street. Do you understand? Republicans have said to you, Mr. or Miss Working Class or Middle Class, who is now in trouble, Republican voter, that you can kiss their collective butts. They don't care about you. They never have cared about you. I don't know why you keep voting for them, and you probably will. Good luck. But now they're saying if you're in trouble with your mortgage, and for whatever reason, and unless you deliberately tried to defraud a mortgage company, which that's what the Republicans would have us believe most of the people who are in trouble with their mortgages have done, which is an absolute lie. Unless you've done that, if you're just a working class stiff like a lot of us, but you sold your soul to the Republican conservative Satan in order to, well, you know what I said earlier. Here's your payback. The Republicans are saying no for any help for you. Representative Spencer Baucus, a Republican from Alabama, who is the ranking member on the House Financial Services Committee, said during a hearing of the panel, quote, "We need to restore fiscal discipline. Treasury needs flexibility, and this won't give it to the agency," end quote. We need to restore fiscal discipline. It sounds like somebody who's into S&M, doesn't it? It really does. Some kind of dollar bill beating. That's what they want to give you. That's exactly what they want to. We need to restore fiscal discipline. If that means you lose your house, tough. Oh, but don't forget to vote for me next time, because I will stop the queers from getting married. Just remember that. I will do that for you. Anyway, there was legislation introduced by Representative Barney Frank, a Democrat. Oh, and he's gay, too. That would require that some of the remaining funds from the so-called Troubled Asset Relief Program, that was the TARP program that was put into effect during the end of the Bush crime family reign, that some of that money be allocated to help expand housing opportunities and assist in mortgage modification. That's all. They're not saying we want to give you your house free. They're just saying, for God's sake, doesn't anybody understand? Didn't George Bush say that the terrorists hated us because we own houses? Well, they must love us now because we're losing our houses, right? Sick bastard. Anyway, the legislation before the House that Barney Frank introduced is known as the TARP for Main Street Act of 2009. All it does is seek to spend $2 billion to prevent foreclosures for borrowers who don't qualify for other mortgage assistance programs. It also would allow $2 billion to help allow tenants to stay in apartment buildings where the owners of the apartment buildings are behind in their mortgages. All Barney Frank is trying to do is to help people hold on. And these filthy, typical, degenerate, miserable Republicans are saying no. Keep that in mind when you go vote, Mr. Republican, Miss Republican. Keep it in mind.
For every color and culture, every person, every belief, your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank of gas. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox based on GM. Compact crossover segment excludes other GM vehicles. It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ben Birch, who is our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Ethical advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Bruce Enberg is our economic correspondent. The executive producer and chief engineer is Kathy Bay, who will probably be back to normal on Monday. As we were mentioning right before the break, the Republicans have decided to say no to a spending bill that seeks $6.5 billion for homeowners who are in trouble. And the Republicans on the House Financial Services Committee are demanding that we need to restore fiscal discipline. No, we don't. This country has not been involved in fiscal discipline since Ronald Reagan. And there's no reason to start now, especially not now. What we should be doing is the fiscal discipline of a different sort, perhaps. Truth is, we are so far in debt now that it's meaningless. It's all meaningless. But as long as we continue to pretend that when we trade these little gray and green pieces of paper that represent nothing but debt, they're not, you know, they're legal tender. Well, go watch Zeitgeist Online, and you'll know what it's all about. But as long as we insist on passing these little green and gray pieces of paper back and forth among ourselves, then why should homeowners who are in trouble be denied the breaks that usually go to corporate America? I mean, what is it? What is it? What kind of a burr is up a Republican's ass that would make him say, no, we don't want to help homeowners? I'll help the military machinery in this country, the military industrial complex. I'll vote billions upon billions of dollars for operations by the CIA terrorist organization that I know nothing about. I'll do anything I can to vote for money to bail out the financial services industry that got us into this trouble. I love banks, even though they're the most rapacious organizations ever conceived in the minds of human beings. But a homeowner? Screw him! What is it about Republicans that make them do that? What is it? Why can a Republican legislator not see that people who voted for him or her are in deep trouble, not of their own making? To a large extent, because Republicans have been sons of bitches where it concerns their duty, which includes partly regulating capitalism. Because if it's not regulated, this happens, among other things. So there is this creep, Spencer Baucus, not to be confused with Max Baucus, but Spencer Baucus from Alabama, saying we need to restore fiscal discipline. How long do you think it would take this punk to demand help from some source if he were in this kind of a situation where his job had been sent overseas thanks to Republican and Democrat policies? His job was gone. Thanks to Republican policies, his unemployment, as paltry as it was, is running out. He has no health insurance, again, thanks to Republicans and cowardly, spineless Democrats. So here you are, Mr. Baucus. How long would it take you to start climbing the walls and demanding that somebody help you out? Huh? What'd you do, go to mom and them? They don't have any money either. I hate these people. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate them? What is it? This is the question for the weekend. I don't mean you should think about it. I just, over the weekend, God forbid. I'm just saying, the question for the weekend, or the decade, or the century, what is it about Republicans that make them so bloodless, so soulless, so lacking any sort of spirituality whatsoever, to the point that they are so easily bought and sold by corporate America? Will do exactly what they're told to do. What is it about Republicans? Now, those are the legislators. What is it about the rank-and-file Republicans who will vote for someone who will turn right around and cut their throats? What is that? 3, 2, 1. No, I don't know either. I have no idea. But I do know for the past almost 30 years now, rank-and-file Republicans have been doing this, voting for people who, office holders, who are absolutely, not only are they not interested in seeing to it that you know, that thing about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness really is available, but to the contrary, that death, slavery, and the pursuit of a job is all that's left. Why do Americans keep getting fooled? Especially Republicans. And now it's getting to the point where I can start asking the other side of that question. Why is it that Democrats continue to get fooled? What the hell is going on? Well, you have your question for the weekend. I'll see you Monday, all right? Take care. Seriously, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are. I'm going straight to hell. Are you tired?